Golf Smarter, number 664. Now, you may hear me talking about our sponsors, but now I want to introduce you to our new partner, TGW, the sweetest spot in golf. Click on the link in today's show notes or even the TGW banner at golfsmarter.com to check out the incredible selection and best prices of any golf retailer you're going to find, in person or on the internet. TGW, aka the Golf Warehouse, is an authorized dealer of the biggest and best brands in golf. But because they focus on online sales and not brick-and-mortar storefronts, overhead is low and savings are incredibly high. And right now, the holiday sales and savings are better than any other time of the year. So when you click on our link, which I hope you do, it will take you directly to a page that welcomes you, the Golf Smarter listener. From there, you can browse through separate categories, including drivers, and then a different category for fairway woods, and then hybrids, and then another one for irons and sets. They even have separate categories for spike shoes and spikeless shoes, cart bags, and another one for just stand bags. And then there's an entire category of range finders. It's an amazing selection from every top name manufacturer and everything that you're looking for. That's just what you're going to see when you enter the site from our Golf Smarter listener page. And please use that so they know that you're interested, browsing, and hopefully shopping. Beyond all these great items on sale, there are holiday specials right now that I'm not allowed to announce publicly. That's how good these sales are. So search for what you need the most or check out what's on your wish list, but check them out today. And there's no problem if you go directly to TGW.com, but they won't know that you're from Golf Smarter, which is really important because we want them to know that this partnership is working. There's so much more than just holiday sales, but you can't take advantage of any of these deals if you don't click on the TGW ad at golfsmarter.com or the link on this episode's show notes and blog. And this episode is also brought to you by Peter Millar. Go to petermillar.com/golfsmarter and receive complimentary shipping and a free golf cap on your first purchase. 7 Important Habits of Highly Effective Golfers with writer and blogger John Sherman.
This is Golf Smarter, sharing stories, tips, and insights from great golf minds to help you lower your score and raise your golf IQ. Here's your host, Fred Green.
Welcome to the Golf Smarter Podcast, John.
Hello, Fred.
How are you?
I'm doing great. How are you?
I'm doing well. You know, we're at a time, it's when we record this, you know, the weather on both sides of the country. You're in the East, you're in New York, I'm in California, we're on fire and you're freezing. How does this work?
Yeah, it's a big difference, I'm sure. It's 45 degrees and raining here, so no golf. But I just found out I'm going to play golf in Bermuda in less than 2 weeks, so that's exciting.
Have you ever played there before?
I've gone there, but I've never played there. So it'll be a nice little early exit from the cold weather here.
Yeah, yeah. What's the most exotic place you've ever played?
Exotic. I don't know about exotic. Interesting would be I played Cabot Links up in Canada earlier this year, which is in Cape Breton, which is way up in the northeast corridor of Canada.
And oh, that must have been during the summer. Golf.
Actually, it was Memorial Day weekend and it was freezing there. It was like 40 degrees, but it was still awesome. Yeah.
Okay. Well, tell me your golf history. I don't like to use the word golfing. Tell me the history of your golf life. Did you start playing as a kid?
Yeah. So my golf history is basically I grew up playing every sport, baseball, hockey, basketball, tennis, anything I could get my hands on. And one day I was in my grandmother's garage and she had like really old golf clubs. I'm talking like hickory shafts in there. Wow. And I just picked them up and I took them across the street to a schoolyard. And I just started hitting balls. And then eventually I struck one of them purely. I used to stack dead grass up to create a tee. And when I hit that perfect shot, I was like instantly hooked. So at the age of like 11 or 12, I started shifting most of my focus to golf.
Wow. And did you play competitively growing up?
Yeah, I played in high school. I played a little bit in college and kind of took a short break from the game. And now, actually, I compete the most that I ever have. I play a lot of amateur events in the New York metro region. So I try and compete in anywhere between like 8 to 12 tournaments a year. And that's been a lot of fun. So I would say, you know, I'm trying to become what you would call a good mid-amateur golfer. So that's currently where I'm at with competing.
Okay. And what drove you to start writing? Or compelled you to start writing?
You know, about 4 years ago, I got the idea for the site. I looked around at the information online available to golfers. And of course, most of it is instruction, meaning, you know, people talking about the golf swing, the technical aspects of it. You know, you can go onto YouTube and find hundreds of thousands of videos about the golf swing and articles about that. So, you know, most people were focusing on the golf swing. And I felt that, you know, for the typical golfer who's consuming information online, there wasn't enough advice available on how to manage their games. What, you know, people would refer to as coaching, you know, how to practice more effectively, the mental side of the game, strategy, just how to manage your entire game. And what I thought I could do is speak to that through a player's perspective as someone who, you know, can play the game at a fairly high level. I've played for a long time. I've learned a lot. I've failed a lot. And I wanted to communicate to other golfers from that perspective. And that's kind of the genesis of the idea for Practical Golf. And part of the reason, I guess, why it's taken off a little bit is that, you know, people appreciate that point of view because I'm a golfer. And I know how to talk to golfers, I believe.
Mm-hmm. Kind of similar to how I just got going with Golf Smarter. It's like there's other ways to, well, when I would do interviews with instructors, I'd always, like, in our casual conversation ahead of time, I'd say, you know, my approach to this is if you understand course management and have a strong mental game, you can probably lower your scores faster than you just work on swing mechanics. And I've been really kind of surprised that most instructors, if not all of them, actually, have all agreed with me, said, oh, yeah, absolutely. It's like, well, then why aren't we focused more on that? Why are all these videos, you know, about swing instruction? It's especially when you're talking about mechanics, I feel like you need someone there with you. It's hard to just watch somebody and think you're doing it right.
Yeah, I would say that, listen, there's tons of great information out there. There's mm-hmm. so many great instructors who understand the golf swing very well. But the issue is what's relevant to your specific swing? So I always tell people, you could show your golf swing to 10 different instructors, all great, you know, minds and great analyzers of the swing. Each of those instructors could give you 10 different explanations of how to fix your swing. Mm-hmm. And all of them might work for you. But the problem is that you can't do all that at the same time. So when it comes to the golf swing, I like continuity, and I would always tell people, you know, your best bang for your buck in your time is to take a lesson, because that's customized advice to your golf swing.
Correct.
I've heard too many golfers who are on this endless search on YouTube for swing tips, and you just cannot play this game, with that many different voices in your head, because when you're on the course and you're under pressure and you have that one chance to swing, having five different conflicting thoughts on how to do it is not going to work out for you. So again, I'm not against information on the golf swing. It's just how people consume it. So my goal, with how I communicate to people is kind of everything outside of the golf swing. How can I help you enjoy the game more, which is most important, first and foremost. And secondly, I want to help lower your scores. And I've been able to do that for a number of people who read my site, because I'm just getting them to be more efficient all around, in all parts of the game. So yes, work on your golf swing, practice, get it better, take lessons. But that's one element of it. And the second element of it is managing the rest, because there's a lot more to golf than just the swing, obviously.
Right. Right. So let's get to the book. Tell me about the book and how you compiled all this information.
So about a year after I started the site, I'd written a lot and I was like, okay, you know, maybe I could turn a lot of these thoughts into a book. So I decided to make it kind of a quick reference guide, something that a golfer could pick up and read maybe in an hour or two and come back to. So I entitled it 101 Mistakes All Golfers Make and How to Fix Them. And it's just kind of a collection of, you know, I address each mistake separately, but it's more of advice on all these different parts of the games that I talk about. So I just wanted to make, like I said, kind of a quick reference guide that someone could read. And hopefully if they get two or three concepts out of the book that they can bring onto their game, then I think the book will be worth it for them. And that's why I think a lot of people have reached out to me who've read it and said, you know, I figured this out in my game. I'd never even thought about it, but I, you know, kind of discovered it through your book. So, you know, I released it about, I think it was almost 3 years ago at this point. Wow. And, you know, it did well. It was on the Amazon. It was the top ranked golf book when it first came out, and it's kind of
congratulations.
Stuck, yeah, it kind of stuck around in the Amazon ecosystem, so people are still reading it, which is cool. And you know, you can purchase it as a physical book and then as an ebook as well.
Very good. Well, that's kind of how I discovered you, because you did a variation of the book as an article called Seven Habits of the Highly Effective Golfer. I love that you put in not just of good golfers, but the highly effective golfer just makes it just sucked me in so much more. And that's kind of what I wanted to talk to you about today, is going over those 7 points and discussing them. Because to me, it was like, yeah, that's golf smarter right down the line. That's kind of perfect. I loved it. So can we break it down? Do you mind going over these 7 points?
And sure.
Great. Well, let's go ahead and let's start with number one, honesty. And I've got the article here in front of me. It's easy to find. And I'll put links to it in our show notes. But it kind of made me nervous at first when I first read it. I mean, you say honesty can mean many things in golf, but it mostly has to do with whether or not you're being honest with yourself and your game. It's like,
yeah. And I mean, I probably most people's first instinct would think like honesty about your scores, but I don't really view it that way. I think that one of the hardest things about golf is expectation management, and that, you know, we could talk about that for hours, but,
and I do.
and you know, most golfers, their instinct is to expect more of themselves on the course than they should. So I'm around golfers all the time that I see, you know, are terribly unhappy because, you know, they'll hit a shot that they thought was a bad shot and, you know, puts them in a bad mood and they're constantly angry throughout the round. When in fact, you know, most of those shots are actually quite reasonable outcomes for their skill level. So when we talk about honesty, it's, you know, how honest are you with your abilities, you know, your skill level as a golfer, how much time you can devote to this game? Because, you know, I can tell you from personal experience, if you want to become a much better golfer, it requires certainly more practice time, but it requires a lot of playing time as well. So you really got to take a step back and be honest about, you know, what you want out of the game. You know, is it just a fun recreational activity? Do you want to be more competitive? Do you want to score better? So I try and address this concept through various articles on the site and get people to explore, you know, their relationship with the game and how honest they can be with themselves about what are reasonable expectations on the golf course. Because if you can't get that part of it right, then you're not going to enjoy yourself.
Give us some examples of where honesty and what you're talking about here manifests itself on the golf course. Situationally.
Okay. So, you know, speaking strategically and course management wise, I think one of the mistakes most golfers make is they don't give much thought process to their targets and, you know, how they should approach the golf course. And for example, you know, the pin location. You know, most golfers assume that they should be aiming at the pin. And, you know, let's say that the pin is tucked on the left side of the green with trouble around it on the left side. You know, just by aiming over to that part of the green, well, now you've reduced your chances of posting a good score on the hole because you think you're being, smart and aiming at the pin, where really by aiming in that spot, you've bought more trouble areas into the play and likely double bogey or worse. So, you know, being honest with yourself and saying like, okay, the chances are I'm not going to hit it at the pin because PGA Tour players don't do that on average. Mm-hmm. So picking a smarter target to the safer side of the green and being honest with your abilities and also the challenge you're faced with each shot absolutely can lead to better scores. I always tell people if you just optimize your targets on the course, specifically with your approach shots, for many golfers, there's plenty of strokes to be saved there, and that's something you can do without even changing your swing. So that's, you know, one example of how I would speak about honesty on the golf course. It's really strategic decisions.
Yeah. One of my all-time favorite lines that I've learned on this show, it actually came from a listener, and if you can listen closely, you'll hear the members of the Golf Smarter audience repeating this with me as I say it, which is, never follow a bad shot with a stupid shot.
Yeah, no, that's, I mean,
and I think I that try, falls into that. Yeah.
Yeah. And I try and talk again, that's another concept where I'm trying to address something that's very difficult to fix in the moment. And I try and talk about it in different ways because I think that's, you know, what a good coach should do is, you know, drive away at the same concept, but explore it, in different messaging. Right. That makes sense.
Yeah. I mean, like just because you can see the flag doesn't mean you can get there. Right?
No.
I mean, yeah, not. Okay, there's an opening in between those trees. Don't do it. Don't do it.
I actually think...
Get it in the fairway, go for the bogey, or you're going to double or triple or worse.
Well, getting back to your point about, you know, making a stupid or poor decision after a bad shot, I often think that golf is very similar to poker and gambling. Because, you know, if you've played poker before, you're familiar with the term on tilt. And that's when... let's say you've lost a few hands and your instinct, in your mind is to get more aggressive. And that's the same exact thing that happens to golfers on the course. So let's say, for example, you've hit that shot, the tee shot into the trees and you're angry about it. A lot of players' instinct is to make up for that mistake. They'll be even more aggressive and they'll try and thread the ball through the trees when in fact, and statistics back this up, you'll post a much lower score on average if you simply just hit the ball back into safety and accept, you know, that you're likely going to make a bogey on the hole, or even double. But if you go for that aggressive shot, well, now you're going to bring that 6, 7, 8, 9 into play on the hole. So, you know, we're all fighting against that inner gambler, so to speak, on the course, because you're going to hit bad shots. I mean, I guarantee it in every round, no matter how well you're playing. It's just a matter of how you react to them and then quieting your emotions and your instinct to be more aggressive on the next shot. It will absolutely save you strokes in the long run.
Right. My sister, who doesn't play, once asked me, why do people compare golf to life? And I said, because like life, golf is just a series of disasters and it's how you handle it.
Right? I've always viewed the game as I've learned so much through the game. And I not to be like melodramatic, but I've always felt when I play golf, I'm almost battling like all of my demons and all of my personal flaws, which is, you know, I used to lose my temper a lot. I used to be very impatient. And, you know, luckily, as I've become an adult and a father, I've probably become better at a lot of those things. And I feel like I'm always fighting against that on the course. And when I play well and keep those, you know, negative parts of my personality at bay, I feel like I've really won a battle. So that, you know, I always feel that what you learn through the game can absolutely apply to life and vice versa, because there's just so many elements of your personality on display on the course.
Hey, John, I need to say that this episode of the Golf Smarter podcast is brought to you by Peter Millar Golf. And I'm curious, do you have any Peter Millar clothing in your closet that you wear either for golf or not?
I do, actually. I recently qualified for a tournament locally that allowed me to play the Maidstone Club, which is one of the great classic golf courses on Long Island and in the world. It was built in the late 1800s, and it's very hard to get on there. So I played my practice round there, and afterwards I, of course, had to buy a a polo from the golf shop, and it was... And it was, in fact, a Peter Millar shirt. So I do own one with the Maidstone logo on it, and it's very nice.
And if you notice the comfort, how superior the comfort is versus other golf shirts.
It's very nice. It's lightweight. I mean, mostly in a golf shirt I'm looking for, obviously it has to look nice and fit well, but I'm most concerned about kind of swing easily in it, and they're very lightweight and comfortable. So yeah, it checks off all the boxes for me.
Oh, that's awesome. So this isn't the first time our Golf Smarter audience has heard from a variety of golfers, both professional and amateurs like us, who not only have Peter Millar well represented in their closets, but rank Peter Millar as some of their most comfortable, stylish, and favorite clothes in their closet. So do yourself a favor. Head over to petermillar.com/golfsmarter to get yours. And while you're there, check out some of my other Peter Millar favorites that I picked out for you to see. Be sure to use my link and you'll receive complimentary shipping and a free golf cap. That's Peter Millar, M-I-L-L-A-R, petermillar.com/golfsmarter, petermillar.com/golfsmarter. And thank you so much for your participation and your testimonial. I appreciate it.
You got it.
I want to get back to our list of the seven habits of a highly effective golfer. We haven't really got far. Maybe we're going to have to come back, but let's keep going. And in number two on your list is something that I feel like we've done so many episodes of the podcast on, and we've called it, it's about the process, not the outcome, NATO golf, which is not attached to outcome, but you say staying present.
Yeah, this is, file this away, and easier said than done, because this is probably the hardest thing to do in golf is that, yeah. You know, what can you do? Golf's an interesting game because it's a stationary game. We're not reacting to anything like we do in other sports. You have plenty of time to think about your next shot, and that's plenty of time to possibly have some negative emotions creep in. So the hardest thing to do is, yes, stay present on each shot and not let what happened on the last shot or even the last several holes come into play. And, you know, that comes through experience. I think, you know, playing more and having even more negative experiences on the golf course prepares you to fight that battle a little bit better. And I would say to anyone, one of the best ways to stay present is to have a consistent process before your shot. You call it a pre-shot routine, something that you can do, and it's kind of like on autopilot. You do it so many times that it feels like you're putting yourself into this automated process that keeps you focused on the target, the shot you're trying to play, and then just executing it rather than worrying about the tee shot you hit on the fourth hole.
Or the three putt on the last hole.
Or the three putt on the last hole. Listen, you know, golf's a difficult game, and you know, it certainly there's going to be undesirable outcomes in every round. And the best thing you could do to become a better golfer is to, and again, you'll never eliminate this entirely. You can get better at it though.
Yeah.
So for example, in my own game, I play a lot competitively, and a lot of these qualifiers I play, and like, you know, beforehand, you got to shoot a certain number. And in the past, I would get so nervous when I was playing well, thinking down the stretch, oh, I'm so close to this number, and I would eventually, I would blow it. And the last few years, I've gotten better at this. And really, I think the difference is accepting both outcomes, good and bad. I just said to myself, you know what? This is just the game. My life's not on the line here. I'm either going to do this and, you know, make it, or I'm not, and I'll be fine either way. And that kind of helps with that process of, you know, staying present on each shot is just, you know, this isn't life or death. Golf can feel that way sometimes. But you know, trying to take a step back and just saying, hey, I'm out here to have fun. And
it's a game.
It's a game. Exactly. as important as it is to me in my life and to many other people's lives, yeah. It's just a game.
And how much did becoming a father impact your feelings and your thought process on this and put a perspective?
I most people say they became a worse golfer when they had kids. I actually became, I'm playing the best golf of my life since I'm a parent.
Really? That's awesome. The fact that you even get to play when you became a parent.
Yeah, luckily I live 30 seconds away from my golf course and I have an amazing wife. So that combination helps.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. That's a good one. That's a good one. How your comment of the best players have short memories in the article. It's such a great and important line just to try to let it go. Let it go. It's okay. Just keep focused on where you are at the moment and don't look at your scorecard.
Yeah, you know, it's funny. Most people have a similar story when they say like, oh, you know, when I wasn't keeping score, I played my best, or I had a bad front nine and I just, you know, on the back nine, I played so much better when I just gave up and was like, all right, you know what, I'm just going to have fun and hit some shots. And then lo and behold, they shoot their best score.
Yep. It happens every time.
Yeah, it happens every time. And I can't tell you a specific strategy to trick your mind into staying present. All I can tell you is that, keeping perspective, putting emphasis on having fun and enjoying yourself can help with all of this. I would say that to anyone. For a long time, I was so focused on the score and the outcome that I wasn't really letting myself enjoy my time out on the course, mm-hmm. Which really is a privilege when you think about it. So, you know, all these things, maintaining perspective, increasing your enjoyment or trying to increase your enjoyment of the game, it kind of takes care of all these other problems at the same time.
Yeah, absolutely. In your third point of practicing with purpose, you intimidate me in a way here because you talk about a player at your course who, after he finishes a round, he's at the range immediately after the round working on what didn't work for him. Now, I understand if, you know, there's things that you want to work on and that hitting a bucket before a round is not practicing, that's just warming up. But when you go out to practice, instead of just hit, sweep, you know, sweep a ball out in front of you and then hit another one and hit another, just ball after ball, but having an intention on your practice is a phenomenal point.
Yeah, and I'll try and neatly package this for you and take too much time because it's so important. Most golfers, and myself for a very long time, fall into this process of thinking, oh, if I just show up at the range, you know, three times a week, I'm going to get better at golf. And, you know, just by hitting 100 balls, I'm entitled to better scores. And what most golfers fall victim to is, I call them kind of like zombie range sessions. They just show up and start rifling balls one after another. They'll hit their driver 100 times. They're not thinking about their target. They're not thinking about their swing at all. They're just going through the motions. And that's fine if you want to, you know, get some light exercise and blow off some steam. But I don't think it's going to make you a better golfer. So what I try and talk about on the site a lot is, you know, practicing with purpose. And if you can become more efficient with your practice, you know, have a plan, and taking lessons can be part of that. If you have someone who's helping you with your swing and they give you homework, that's effective practice because it's specialized and it's trying to fix something in your swing. Having a plan and being efficient with your time, you'll get much better results with, you know, 30 minutes of efficient practice than sitting there for 3 hours and just rifling through 250 balls.
Yeah.
So I try and tell people, and again, this is a topic you can talk about forever, but the main, the cliff notes on it is, you know, you don't have to spend a ton of time, but you should be more efficient and focused with the time that you have. And a lot of that can come through challenging yourself through practice games, which gets you to randomize shots, which is what you're experiencing on the golf course. You don't have 20 opportunities to hit a 7-iron in a row during a round, unless you hit 20 of them out of bounds. So anything you could do to recreate the situation you'll find yourself in on the course, which is, you know, hitting a different club on each shot, picking a target, even just thinking about where you're hitting and putting some pressure on yourself. These are all things, small changes you can make to your practice sessions to get more value out of them. And that's something I talk about a lot on the site. There's plenty of articles for people to read about that.
Yeah. And your fourth point here is is kind of different in the sense of it's not so much a mental part of the game or the strategic part of the game. It's definitely part of the mechanics part of the game, but it's critically important, and that is a great short game. Oh my gosh, am I learning how important it is. I spend more time practicing my short game, my putting and my chipping, than I do with my driver, and what a difference it's made.
Yeah, I think with the short game, the problem for a lot of players, and again, myself included, is that it's just not as fun to practice that part of the game. I've even heard, I listened to an interview with Charles Howell III, who is, you know, the cash machine of the PGA Tour. He hates practicing his putting.
Wow.
He said it. He's like, I just want to go out and hit. And he's a ball striking machine. And that's, you know, why he's made millions of dollars as a golfer. But he said he hired a new putting coach. And just the fact that he got him to practice his short game and putting more was worth it alone. So this is something that affects golfers at all levels. It's just not as fun for most people to practice the short game. But what I would tell anyone is that, you know, every golfer is capable of having a great short game. Not every golfer is capable of having a long game like Rory McIlroy, though. You'll never hit the ball like Rory, but you can chip and putt like him if you worked at it hard enough. So it's a part of the game where, and I'm not saying to people to spend all their time on the short game, just devote some time to it.
Mm-hmm.
And it's one of those quick wins in golf where if you just spent, you know, 10 or 15 minutes of those practice sessions, becoming more efficient with your wedges, and improving speed control on the greens, which will reduce three putts.
Mm-hmm.
That's a quick way for a lot of golfers to shave, you know, 3, 5, 7 strokes off their score, depending on the player. There's just so many golfers who are wasting strokes inside 100 yards because they can't get the ball on the green with their wedge from 50 yards because they just don't know how to play that shot. Or they're three putting from 20 feet, where if they just worked on their speed control a little bit, they could eliminate that outcome most of the time. So it's one of those things where you can get it. If you spend some time on it, focus on it, you can get some quick wins. The golf swing is the main vehicle to scoring. You know, how you hit your tee shots and your approach shots is going to have the most impact on your scores. Like that is a given. But it's much more time consuming to fix that part of the game for most players. So the short game can be a quick win, better bang for your buck in terms of time invested and score outcome you'll see. So I always tell people, like, do not ignore the short game, invest some time in it. And like you said, you can see a world of difference sometimes.
Yeah. Your fifth point speaks directly to the people who are listening to this. And the person who is listening to us right now, and it that's why we refer to the Golf Smarter listeners as golf martyrs. So we kind of just moved the S around. Instead of golf smarter, it's golf martyrs. And point number five is passion. The best golfers don't get where they are without having a deep love and passion for the game. And I think we're all right there.
Yeah, I mean, you know, for most golfers who play this game their whole lives, I mean, the passion is there. And, you know, you could say that about any endeavor in life, I would think. If the passion isn't there, if you're kind of faking it or mailing it in, how can you expect to get better?
Right.
And I can
golf
tell
exposes that in a heartbeat.
Of course, yeah. I mean, I've, you know, through my 25 plus years in the games, I've gone through periods where I really had no passion for golf. I wasn't mm-hmm. enjoying it much. Mm-hmm. And that really showed in my performance. I wasn't playing well. I wasn't having a good time on the course. And I kind of stepped away from the game temporarily to help reset. And it helped me, you know, rediscover that passion for the game. But I would also tell anyone who's struggling and not enjoying it, you know, don't keep torturing yourself. You don't have to play. You can take a break for a while and do something else. Because if you're going to take 4, 5, 6 hours out of your day on a weekend that could be spent with your family or elsewhere, not sure that's the best use of time if it's just going to make you angry and upset, right?
Yeah, exactly. On point number six, this one kind of cracks me up because it's confidence. And it is so fleeting. I mean, there are moments, there are rounds, there are weeks where I just feel like I'm playing with a lot of confidence right now. And nine holes, three consecutive bad holes can just explode that into your face.
Yeah, it's unbelievable how quickly this game can humble. I mean, even you see this on TV with touring pros.
Sure.
You'll see some guys, you've seen some pros, I forget who it was recently, he shot like in the 80s and then shot a 64 the next day. It's,
yes.
I mean, just, it's like, you
I
know,
think
that
it was the other way around. I think he shot in the 60s one day.
It's happened.
Like
there's
a
every variation
and
of that.
It's 78 in two consecutive days or something.
Yeah, no matter what, it's like, you know, that story with Icarus flying too close to the sun. This the second, it's unbelievable because it happens to me, the second where I start thinking like, oh, I've got this thing tamed, you know, there's a horrible shot to just humble you immediately. I can tell you anecdotally, this year it happened to me. I was playing in a tournament at Bethpage Black, which is, you know, if you've never played it, it's one of the hardest golf courses in the world for a number of reasons. And it's always scary to play it in tournament conditions. And on the first day I shot a 73, which was by far and away my best round there. And I was found myself tied, I think, for third or fourth at this event. And it was a 2-day event with a cut. And I was like, wow, you know, I'm hitting the ball great. And, you know, maybe I can win this thing. I'm like, I'm feeling good. And then the next day, you know, everything that was working for me was just a little bit off, you know, every drive that you can't miss the fairway there. Anyone who's played the course knows that. So every drive that I was hitting in the fairway was missing the fairway by, you know, a few yards. Every putt for par that was going in the prior day was missing by a few inches. You know, the bad, you know, I don't believe in good breaks or bad breaks. They're just events of physics on the golf course. The ball was bouncing one way for me one day, and then it was bouncing another way for me the other day. So I reversed that trend and shot an 88 the next day and plunged all the way down to like 30th place. But I remember feeling so confident when I teed off to when I finished the round, just beaten up, and and that course will do it to you, but that's kind of an extreme example, but it just shows you, you know, the second you think you've got this thing figured out, the golfing gods, so to speak, are there to remind you otherwise.
Oh yeah, there's I've always said there's three things in life you don't want to mess with. I was going to use the F word. You don't want to mess with, and that is golf, fire, and the ocean.
Yeah.
just when you think you've got it figured out, it'll remind you who's in charge. And unfortunately, fire and the ocean will kill you.
Yeah,
luckily,
one
golf
thing
won't.
One thing I would say about confidence in general, it is something that you can have as a golfer. And, you know, what I mentioned in the article is that you just can't declare confidence in golf and just say like, okay, I'm going to go out and be confident about my putting today.
No.
I think it comes from experience and work. You know, I feel confident in my abilities as a golfer overall because, you know, I've played this game for 25 years. I've put in a lot of work. I've experienced some horrible moments on the golf course, you know, that I put myself through. It was my own doing, but I learned from them and I try and, you know, learn from my mistakes. And, you know, that's developed an overall confidence in my ability of the game, but I didn't just declare it. It was a process that took time. So when we talk about expectation management, I think it is possible to become a confident, you know, happier golfer in general. But you do have to put some work in and examine yourself along the way and make changes through that process. And I try and help people with that, you know, through my writing.
And I think you're doing a great job with that. Thank you so much. Now we're going to get to wrap it up here with your seventh point, which is humility. And you know, someone asked me recently, you know, are you a good golfer? And God, you'd never want to say that, right? I mean, even touring pros will never tell you I'm a good golfer. So I kind of thought for a moment, I said, well, I'm not a good golfer, but I'm not bad.
Yeah, I mean, it's really a relative term.
Right, exactly.
I know some people who, you know, in some circles, if they said they were a plus one handicap, they would be like, oh, exactly. you're not up to snuff. Whereas, you know, if someone else said I'm a plus one handicap, they'd be like bowing down to you. So, yeah, it's, you know, that when you say, are you a good golfer? I think the better question is, because most people just ask like, oh, what'd you shoot that day?
Right.
And the score is important. You know, I care about score. I'm competitive. But when you're talking about, you know, your approach to this game and humbleness is, are you a successful golfer? And in my estimation, you know, this has changed over the years, but, you know, I think a successful golfer is someone who enjoys themselves, is, you know, reasonable with their expectations of their skill level. You know, they play the game, not just for an outcome every time, a score. They play it for the process of being outside, enjoying time with friends, traveling. You know, there's so many great things that this game can offer us. So I think, you know, obsessing about the score and your handicap, and, you know, whether or not you consider yourself good compared to other golfers doesn't necessarily lead to success or happiness in this game. I mean, that's just my opinion. But, you know, I think having that humble attitude towards the game can certainly help shape your experience and make it a more positive one. Because, you know, I found as a golfer, when I got too high or too low on myself, you know, that's when things weren't going well. So, you know, let's say you made a birdie on a hole and then you're like, oh, you're so excited and you're happy. And then all of a sudden you have a bad hole and then you're down in the dumps. You know, it's hard to manage your emotions out there sometimes, but I think, you know, getting back to this idea of being humble and saying like, okay, that was just, you know, that happened on that hole. Let's go on to the next one and see what happens. So,
it's
again,
really,
something that, yeah, it takes time to develop that.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's really amazing how, golf will, even if you're a new golfer, it'll teach you very quickly not to get too excited about something that just happened or brag about it, because it's going to come back at you in a moment. You know, it's going to hurt you.
Yeah. And I can tell you, I played around some really great golfers. And I'm talking more about, you know, the golfers you would see at tournaments who are, you know, the types of players that everyone would aspire to be. And, you know, they have a remarkable ability to, most of them, not all of them, of course, stay humble in the moment and just kind of take what the course is giving them that day and just go on with their round, rather than making it this dramatic roller coaster, which you see a lot of golfers. You know, I can't tell you how many golfers I play with who, you know, right off the first tee, if it doesn't go well, it's like their day is ruined. And, you know, the rest of the round is this roller coaster of good shot, I'm angry, bad shot, I'm angry, good shot, I'm going crazy. that's a difficult way to go through this game. And I know a lot of people can't help that, and I couldn't for a long time myself. Mm-hmm. So that's why I've tried to, and again, maybe that's because I'm a parent now, but it's kind of mellowed things out a bit, and not getting too excited or too down, and staying, you know, humble about the game in general.
Right, right. I've fantasized that if I ever had the opportunity to interview Steph Curry about golf, you know, and who is clearly one of the all-time great basketball players, not only of our time, but in history, and who's a very passionate and a very good golfer. But I would ask him if, like, so when you make a 3-point shot or you hit one at the buzzer, you have your little shimmies, you throw up your three fingers, you celebrate on the course, on the basketball court when you succeed. But if you make a long putt, are you going to do the same thing? Right? Are you going to bring that kind of celebration that you do in basketball? Would you dare do that on the golf course?
It's an interesting question, because I think it brings into the difference between golf and other sports. Mm-hmm. Because I don't think, at least from what I've experienced playing multiple sports, is the things that work in most traditional team-based sports don't work in golf.
Mm-hmm.
And that's not to say you can't get, you know, a nice little fist bump or after a good event on the course, you can pump yourself up a little, but there's nothing wrong with that. But, you know, you're not going to run around jumping up in the air and, you know, chest bumping your no. playing partners. So I think golf's different where you can't get jacked up with your emotions. Like a football player, like they've got to get really, you know, they're playing an aggressive game. They've got to push their bodies. Same with basketball players or a lot of other athletes. They have to push their bodies really hard and get themselves intensely motivated because it's a physical competition. Whereas golf, that's not the case. In fact, it's the opposite. I think, you know, relaxing yourself and your body and keeping things more calm in general will lead to better play. So it's an interesting, I always think, juxtaposition between golf and other sports that people come to, because I don't think it's the same set of rules applied on how to play well.
Yeah. When my son was a high school wrestler, their coach wouldn't let them celebrate a victory of their match. He kept saying, "No, act like you've been there. Don't make a big deal about it. Just act like you've been there." I think with golf, though, what happens is you don't want to celebrate because you know it's going to be your next shot, right? I call that the curse of the birdie. You make a great shot, you make a great putt, your next shot's your next hole, you're going to double bogey. So just shut up.
Well, and also one other main difference I would say between the Steph Curry celebration is that he's doing that in front of 25,000 people. He's one of the greatest athletes of all time. He's got millions of others watching him on TV. Like that, that's a big time event. Whereas if you make birdie at your local muni with three other people around, that's not the same set of circumstances.
I still don't think if he was playing in a golf major, he's going to be slapping people around and jumping up and, you know, shimmying.
Yeah, it just wouldn't work. You wouldn't do that.
No, it just doesn't work.
You know, it wouldn't work. You know, if you did that on the third hole of a tournament, you know, you'd be setting yourself up for disaster because your emotions are getting out of control.
Right. And your final line here is, above all, the highly effective golfer knows they will never have the game conquered and accept that challenge. I love that.
Yeah, I think that's, I mean, that's what, you know, there's many ways to enjoy this game. Some people can just go out, hit balls, don't even keep score and have fun. And to be honest, I envy some of those golfers. You know, I'm on a continual process to get better and improve. And that's why I love this game, because you'll never have it conquered. No one has it conquered.
Right.
So I think if you can
and
take
you're not
going
to get better every time you go out there.
No, not absolutely not. So I think if you can, if you can have like a healthy view on the game that way and say, you know, this is a lifelong conquest, so to speak, that's great. I mean, there's plenty of great things about golf for a lot of people, for it being, you know, one of the focal points in their life. It can help them, you know, be a happier person overall. You know, Think of all the great things that golf gets you involved in. There's a social element, there's exercise, walking, sense of purpose. Like, these are all great things that have been shown to keep people happier and living longer. So, you know, that's one of my, you know, quests, is to help people enjoy the game more and stay engaged in it. So, and one thing about that is just knowing that, yeah, it's always going to be this continuous process of trying to get better. And certainly it's not going to be a straight line upwards.
Well, we appreciate what you've done and the input that you've given us to remind us about these things. The book is called 101 Mistakes All Golfers Make and How to Fix Them. It's available on Amazon. And again, there'll be links to it on in our show notes. John Sherman, J-O-N Sherman. And the website is practical-golf.com. John, thanks so much for your time and for writing this article, reminding us what we need to remember.
I appreciate it. I had a lot of fun.
Okay, I've got to update you on our time at Top Golf Crush at AT&T Park in San Francisco this past weekend. Now, if you paid any attention to the news lately, you've heard about the fires raging out of control in Paradise, California. And it made the air quality in the Bay Area so bad that we were ranked as having the dirtiest air in the world, even worse than reports from China or India. Thank goodness it's temporary, but it was, and it is, it continues to be bad. They say that the air quality index, if it's over 70, then it's really not safe to be outside. Well, Sunday morning in San Francisco, which was well over 100 miles away from these fires, that morning, the index was down to 230. So folks with asthma were very smart staying home and wearing masks. It's a crazy and sad thing that some of the people who were announced as winners weren't able to make it because they had conditions. Now, I'm not sure if you were able to watch live on our Facebook Golf Smarter page, but it's there now. The video, it's about 30 minutes long. We didn't do the whole session, but it is a lively and silly session. It's on our Facebook page, Golf Smarter, or my page, Fred Green, and has already had hundreds of views. So I'm happy that you could see how much fun Topgolf can be for everybody. And that's the amazing part. 90% of people who go to Topgolf are not considered golfers. Most of them leave going, I want to learn how to play golf. Topgolf's amazing. So, but beyond having a great time, I've got four new golf buddies in the Bay Area. And as I've mentioned in the past, I really do enjoy meeting you and hopefully playing 18 with you at some point. As a matter of fact, I received an email yesterday from a listener in Germany who's coming to San Francisco and Sonoma for New Year's. So we've already scheduled a round together. So you too, please let me know if you're in the Bay Area or you're going to be in the Bay Area, then let's play. And please don't worry about the quality of your play. Don't tell me I'm not a good golfer. Don't say I just play. I don't care. We're not playing for money. This is just to have fun and to meet each other. Because your level of performance is not why I play golf. I play to be outside when it's safe and to meet new people. So let's do this, all right? Now, other business to take care of is that we only have a few more prizes left in our weekly drawing. And if you haven't checked our prize list on golfsmarter.com/giveaway, then you've missed some of the changes that have been made. Now, up next, we have a complete set of five books from author and Golf Smarter listener Richard Todd. Then our next one, it was just going to be a DVD, but no, I've created a Golf Smarter Championship Toolkit that includes the exclusive Golf Smarter cap that you can see our Topgolf winners wearing. And if you're interested in that cap, let me know. Maybe we'll put some on sale for the site. Anyway, it's also, this championship kit also includes the hat, a sleeve of Dixon Earth golf balls with the Golf Smarter logo, a set of shoe tips thought reminders, a windage wind powder to help you play the wind, the Extraordinary Golf DVD by Fred Shoemaker, two books on peak performance by Scott Ford, and the book Selling on the Green. It's quite a package, don't you think? Well, after that, we've got two more prizes to go. And the first of the two is a year-long subscription to Decade Golf, which you're going to be hearing all about in an upcoming episode. And then finally, a Seymour putter. Our final prize is a Seymour putter. Seymour currently boasts 35 tour wins, 7 Ryder Cup victories, and 3 majors. So make sure your name's on the list to win one of these great prizes or multiple ones, because if you've already registered once, your name is eligible with each drawing, whether you've won or not. Deadline to enter is Sunday midnight Pacific time, 3 a.m. Eastern. Sign up now at golfsmarter.com/giveaway. But we have a new prize to give away this week. Let's congratulate Golf Smarter listener Vince Meringer of Ithaca, New York, who is the winner of an online back pain troubleshooting assessment with Thomas Malcho of lowbackpaincenter.com. Vince, not that I'm hoping you are having any back issues, but if you are, then let me tell you, you're on your way to a healthier, stronger back and many more years of productive golf. I mentioned at the end of last episode that we're getting a puppy. Well, she has arrived. Do I sound tired? She's really smart, and she's picking up many of the rules of the house as Lulu is, or Tita. Tita is not letting her get away with anything, our other dog. But let's just say that for an 8-week-old puppy, we have a long way to go. But boy, is she cute. Oh, man, she's adorable. She's an F1 medium golden doodle. And we're guardians. So she's going to have two litters of her own before she's retired and then is ours forever. Her name is Moxie Doodle Green. And there are pictures on my Instagram and Facebook accounts if that interests you at all. And if dogs do interest you, you should check out our other smarter podcast called Good Dog. My wife, Joanne, hosts that show. She's the real talk show host in the family. And it's called Good Dog. It's in iTunes and other places. You can find it. You should check it out. It's like Golf Smarter. It's an interview show with experts and storytellers and things all about being a dog owner. Now, don't forget to click on the TGW ad to take advantage of some of the best prices in golf. The link is in your show notes or on our homepage at golfsmarter.com. And if you're in the U.S., I want to wish you and your family a very happy Thanksgiving. I know that I have a lot to be grateful for these days, and you are an important part of that, so thank you. If you have any questions, comments, or suggestions, follow me on Instagram, Facebook, or Twitter at GolfSmarter, or click on the Hey Fred button at golfsmarter.com.